I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe artist Dana Matlin. She is doing an art benefit for the Lifelink that opens tomorrow, Friday, June 26th at 5 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Mary Charlotte.
And Lee Zlotoff joins us. He's hosting the event. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Dana, you are exhibiting paintings that you made about your brother Jason. Tell us about Jason, who he was, how you came to make this series of paintings.
Ah, gosh, where to start? He was just a wonderful boy. We were 2 years apart growing up, and very bright and creative, and he got into the film world. But by the time he was about in his late teens, early 20s, we realized that he was manic depressive. And this was even before the term bipolar existed, but he was definitely bipolar. And life got very interesting and crazy with him, a lot of ups and downs. But he continued to work, and he actually got his college degree during that time. But in a manic episode when he was 34, he passed away on a motorcycle.
And I read that, and I just imagined that kind of manic state where you think that you're invincible and that you can do anything and you can drive fast and you can drive off cliffs, and that's just how people can lose their lives.
Yeah.
What was he like both when he was in a balanced state and then when he was not?
Well, when he was balanced, he had a great dry sense of humor. He was loving, compassionate. He was actually married for about a year. Just a really good person, just a wonderful brother, son, everything. And gosh, when he was manic, he would just really get in your face, get angry, frustrated, and he would do some very unusual things.
Like what?
Well, he almost didn't graduate from Art Center in Pasadena because he threw a typewriter off a balcony.
Oh, on dear.
The I guess the morning of his graduation.
He was an artist also?
He was, yes, very creative. He was a photographer, and he worked on films. He started very young. He got involved in photography, and he started actually writing. Around 12, 13, 14 years old, he was writing articles for a major photography magazine. He was judging film contests. He was one of the early kids that worked in clay animation. And then as he got older, he was still inventing. He created something called a side cam for photographing, for filming, that connected to a motorcycle. And this is way before
study cams.
Yes. So it was very exciting. But, you know, he'd end up in a manic state, and he would drove it off into the desert and left it there. So, you know, things would always happen and make it very hard for him to move forward.
So what was it like for you and for the family to live with those extremes?
Wow. Well, you know, by the time we realized he was manic, being a little older than him, I was already out of the house, and he had been away to college, so I never really lived with him during that time. But we did spend a lot of time together, and when he was well, I was able to go on outings with him with my young children at the time, and we just would be like normal days. But when he was manic, it was scary. It can be scary.
You are an artist, and there seem to be links between mood disorders and creativity. I mean, those links are often made, and I wondered, like, did you worry that maybe you could end up going to that place?
Oh, of course. You worry about yourself. You worry about your kids. You know, but you can't really. You watch for signs, but you can't worry about it. You know, I think mental health is kind of a continuum, and although he might have been very extreme, if I stay up for 2 days painting all night or something, does that make me manic? You know, I'm a bit in an altered state when I do that, but I'm not manic. So, you know, and then I'm going to sleep for 24 hours after that. But,
right.
You know, we all have highs and lows. It's just a matter of, do they affect our daily lives and our production?
So how did you come to make this set of paintings about your brother?
Well, you know, it's been just over 20 years since he passed, and I always wanted to do something, and I'm just at a time in my life where I had the luxury to put some energy into it. So I started doing a project about people with mental illness, and I started with pictures of Beethoven and Van Gogh, and I thought I'd do famous people. And I started and tried, and it just wasn't really connecting. And then I did a picture of my brother as a baby and somehow brought in these zebra stripes. And Lee walked by and said, "Hey, now we've got something. Just keep going with it." And that's what I did. And I have about 28 paintings done, and some are diptychs and triptychs, so I have a lot of canvases.
What was the symbolism of the zebra stripes?
You know, I really didn't even know where it came from. I knew that the painting needed something else, needed an image, and somehow I was attracted to the zebra. And I realized later on that we had spent a lot of time at the zoo growing up with my dad and my grandparents, and Jason loved zebras. And then little by little I realized, as I did some research on zebras, that their character was a lot like someone that had a mental illness.
Really?
Yeah. First of all, they're not, you can't domesticate them.
Yeah, you can't put a saddle on a zebra. You can't teach a zebra to pull a cart. They won't do it. They're truly wild animals and right. will resist any attempt to, you know, to domesticate them.
Go zebras.
And also the black and white stripes just seemed very, just a perfect element to describe the highs and lows and feeling entrapped.
Yeah, and I think you wrote somewhere that they're almost like those stripes end up being kind of prison bars of entrapment in their symbolism. Yeah.
I have one portrait that I did of him towards the end of his life, and it was one that I was working on late at night, and I just couldn't stop crying because I could feel his pain, how he was caught inside of this thing and just wanted out, just wanted it gone, and just, it was just sad.
Did he talk to you about that?
Sometimes we did. Yeah.
He kept a lot of journals, too, all of which Dana ended up with. So some were kind of incoherent ramblings, but some were remarkably kind of, you know, cohesive and lucid. And it kind of, you could just look at the journals and sort of see the struggle that went on between kind of his sanity and his madness.
There's something so weird when a person passes and they leave their journals, and then you're like, should I read them? Are they private? Were they meant to be private? Did he leave these behind for us? Did you go through that? Or did it seem intrusive?
At first, but my brother liked to tell his story. He was actually working on a film trying to express what he was going through. And so a lot of his journaling were actually writings for his films.
So this is a benefit for the Lifelink. Tell us about the Lifelink and how you connected with them.
Oh, it's very exciting. We came here, we've just been here 9 months. We moved here 9 months ago, and we were connected with some people that suggested the Lifelink. So we went and we met Carol Luna Anderson. She's the executive director, and a few of the other staff, and they were just wonderful. They were very open and excited about it. I had already most of the paintings done and said, this is what I want to do, because I wanted to give back to the community and to help bring attention to the wonderful resources that they provide.
While she was working on the paintings, we would have conversations. I'd say, this is very emotional and personal and powerful stuff. What do you want to do with this? Because typically most galleries like things that are kind of innocuous, you know, so that they can hang on a lawyer's wall or a doctor's wall and right. not upset anybody. And Dana said, I'm not sure, but whatever we do, I want to find a mental health organization and I want to do a benefit, because that's what I think Jason would want, and that's my way of trying to give back in some sense. And so when we came to Santa Fe, we started asking friends and acquaintances, okay, are there such facilities here, and which one do you think would be open to, you know, our offering this as a benefit? And so the LifeLink came up, and we went to see them, and they were very receptive. So
they have a residential facility. They have day clubhouse for people to come and have activities. They have resources and support groups for family members, and of course therapy, and on.
And the show is 3 days, so it's this Friday evening, which you have to RSVP because there will be alcohol, and consequently it has to be private. But it's open to the public on Saturday and Sunday. And Sunday at 12:30, one of the staff therapists from the LifeLink is going to lead a discussion group about mental illness and mental health. And some former clients of the LifeLink will be reading from a book they put together, which I actually believe is now on Amazon, called Singing Underwater.
Yeah, we talked about that on this show a while back when it came out.
Right.
Yeah, very interesting book, all by people who've been involved in the LifeLink.
Right. So we're hoping at least on one of the days to actually have people come and sort of have a roundtable discussion so people can... You know, it's very difficult if you're a family member of someone who has a mental illness, because unless you really go looking for support resources, the resources are generally aimed at the person who's got the affliction, not necessarily at the family. But the truth is, the whole family has the affliction because it affects everybody. I mean, the more you love a person and the more pain they're in,
yeah,
the more it affects you. And so we wanted to, as part of the show, offer the opportunity to people come and sort of talk about those family experiences and maybe be able to get some direction and advice about how to cope with that.
I saw a film in the Santa Fe Film Festival some years ago called M, which was about a young man and woman, beautiful couple, and it turned out that the woman had bipolar illness. And as I was watching it, my friend who I was watching it with turned to me and said, "Mental illness is contagious." And I've taken that sentence with me into my life, because when you are around a person for a lot who's mentally ill, something rubs off on you and you need a lot of support. Not that you necessarily become mentally ill per se, but it's harder to maintain your own balance.
Well, because you're involved with someone who is, by definition, sort of experiencing an altered or affected reality, and you can't help but sort of have to acknowledge that other reality, because you could simply say, well, okay, you're having an episode or whatever, and I'm going to refuse to engage with you, but the lines are not necessarily that clear. And so you engage with them, and then you have to understand at some point, wait, we're kind of going we're going off the edge of the playground here. And so it sort of sucks you in, and you have to find a way to maintain your own balance and try and help them maintain their balance. And consequently, you have two people who are frequently off balance. You know, one may be more than another, but you're both off balance. So.
Right, right.
Well, I think my paintings kind of illustrate that, because there's so many of them are about the family and about him when he was young and the balance of that. And how does it choose him, you know? Our genetics, it's just,
it's tricky business. And I have to say, I mean, looking at your paintings, the ones that I've seen so far, they don't, when you think of, oh, a series of paintings about mental illness, you might think of something very harsh and jagged, but there's a beauty and softness to these images.
Yes, and if the listeners want to see some samples, they can look at my website. It's dmatlin.com.
dmatlin.com. And also, if people want to RSVP to the reception tomorrow night, they can write to info@dmatlin.com. And the reception is actually at a private house, which is being provided just for these 3 days, thanks to somebody's great generosity.
Right.
Yeah, that's Koala Homes and Colleen Deering from Barker Realty.
Oh, okay. And people can also find out more information about the LifeLink at thelifelink.org. So it's just about time to go, but is there anything else that you guys would like to tell us before we go?
Well, I guess I would say, of course, I'm biased because I've seen these paintings literally come to life in front of me, but one of the things that I find missing in a lot of art is, what's the story? You know, you want a painting, even if it's a single image, to sort of convey at least a story you can imagine. And
what are you, a filmmaker or something?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And one of the things that I find so powerful about this series is that the story is very clear, and it's kind of a very powerful and emotional experience. And for me, I can go look at a lot of art, and it just leaves me, you know, unaffected. It's a lovely image, so what? There are millions of lovely images out there. But when you can look at something and understand and appreciate the story that's connected to it, somehow I think it has a lot more power and value. And so I know that that's part of this show and part of why I'm excited to be involved in it.
Dana Matlin is an artist. Lee Zlotoff is hosting the event. And Lee, you are also the creator of the TV show MacGyver.
That's true.
Which is having actually a comeback, which we're going to talk about on the Radio Cafe another time.
Okay.
Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.